Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne here at 88.5 KRFY, community radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you will enjoy the medical topics I have chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. If you missed the first Monday, the show is also rebroadcast at 8 a.m. on the third Monday. You can not only listen to our shows on your radio at 88.5, but you can stream this show and every KRFY show at krfy.org. In fact, you can stream us from wherever you are in the world. We also are available as a podcast at krfy.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. The monthly topics discussed here will feature the medical designations for each month. Please remember, this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. Since this is June, today's show features the great outdoors, a topic very appropriate to be discussing in North Idaho, where many of us enjoy so many varied outdoor pursuits and appreciate the gorgeous scenery all around us. I have a friend that'll stand on the golf course and she'll go, "We live here." And it's just so amazing and wonderful to be looking at your surroundings when you're doing anything outside. I have two guests here with me today. Carol Jenkins, a retired nurse who teaches the Wilderness and Remote First Aid course with the Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness. And she actually did the initial training in wilderness safety for the Idaho Trails Association. Also with me today is Tom Dabrowski, who wears multiple hats. He leads hikes for the Monday Hikers, or he used to, and the Idaho Trails Association, where he not only is on the board, but also a crew leader for trail maintenance and teaches the backpacking course called Backpacking 101 for the Idaho Trails. And those are the courses that we're going to be talking about in just a few minutes. And here with me also is Susie Perez, who many of you know from the morning show, the real morning show, here at KRFY. I also call her my executive producer. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Dr. Joanne. So, Medical Musing has already gained many listeners, and the subjects and interviews are timely and very interesting. So thank you for bringing vital and informative medical information to the KRFY airwaves. I wanted to let the listeners know a little bit about you. Dr. Joanne Royans is a longtime KRFY broadcaster, previously broadcasting and DJing Otto's Eclectic Music Mix. And now you are hosting your own show, Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. And as you say, it airs the first and third Mondays of the month at 8 a.m. So who are you, Dr. Joanne? Dr. Joanne is a retired pediatrician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010. You previously worked as a pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years and then covered at Sandpoint Pediatrics. As the media spokesperson for Central Ohio Pediatric Society, you contributed to print, online media, radio, and television, so you have a medical and broadcast experience and expertise background. You also are a mother of four adult children, and we feel fortunate to have your show as part of our Monday morning programming here at KRFY.
Thank you, Susie. That was a great introduction. And I do really, this is a show that I've actually been thinking about doing for years. So I finally got around to writing a proposal and the board accepted it. So I'm very happy to be here. A little background on the designation to celebrate the great outdoors. In 1998, President Clinton proclaimed a week in June as Great Outdoors Week, so that we all could enjoy or be encouraged to enjoy and appreciate nature, to increase jobs and recreation while giving a boost to the economy. In 2008, the national governors hopped on and they designated June as Great Outdoors Month. By 2016, recreation was 2.2% of our gross national product, or GDP, and generated 4.5 million jobs and $412 billion to the economy. And so on June 6, 2019, the U.S. Senate officially recognized June as Great Outdoors Month. in a proclamation written by our Idaho senators, Jim Risch and Mike Crapo. June 1st is also National Trails Day for all our ATVers out there and our hikers. So the purpose of the Great Outdoors Month is to get people outdoors to enjoy the beauty of the United States and our world. How to do it can vary. You can take a walk, a short hike, a half-day hike, a day hike, a multi-day hike, kayak, cycle, swim, boat, camp, pickleball, tennis, golf, ski, snowboard, ride an ATV or motorcycle, be a wildlife photographer, and so many activities. So we're here to encourage you to get outside and enjoy nature, but to do it safely. And that's why we're discussing our wilderness safety courses. We're very spoiled here in North Idaho. Not only do we have natural beauty, but also many city parks, county parks, or metro parks, state parks, and of course our amazing national park system. And being outside not only has general health benefits, but also very important mental health benefits. All these outdoor activities have an element of danger, however, if we don't respect the great outdoors and come prepared. Carol, let's start with you and a little summary of your course or the goals of your course and, like I said, maybe even like an outline of the course.
Okay. One of the interesting things about this course, it is designed for situations that are more than 1 hour away from either the emergency room or an ambulance arriving. So when I teach the course, I kind of teach a little bit of regular first aid and remote first aid. For example, if you are within 1 hour of an emergency room or an ambulance, we no longer splint. And that will break the heart of every former Boy Scout who just loved splinting, when he first took his course, because we found that it's really better not to move those bones, to do anything with that injury until professional care arrives.
Very interesting. So that's your primary assessment.
So that's part of the primary. But in remote first aid, we have a lot of things to consider. One, we've got the environment. When we have a distance, how do we call to evacuate if necessary? So this is an intense course. It's 16 hours. And by the time the person finishes this course, they have a great deal of knowledge about the kinds of things that could happen in a remote setting, how to assess them, how to care for them, how to evacuate. So they really are prepared to lead a group hike or go out with their families or do some trail work, whatever the situation is.
Do you give them then a list of things that they should be, packing with them, or do you have some supplies that they can, or, some direction to where they can purchase the different things that they need?
Well, our first aid manual that the students all have has 3 pages of potential things for your first aid kits. So there's plenty of information for them to draw on. I have a feeling, though, that it's important for everyone to take a look at what they call their first aid kit. Take out anything they don't know how to use. Take out anything that's dried up or expired, or the tape doesn't stick anymore or whatever. And also to prepare the kit for what you plan to be doing. If it's, just a day hike, you'd have a different kit to take than if you're out for a week. For Scotchman's Peak, we have folks that lead hikes. So we have a kit made up for them, things that you'd need, just during a day, for example, for first aid care. And then we also have trauma kits for those folks that are going out there and removing trees with crosscut saws and in very difficult environment where falls can happen, injuries can happen. So the trauma kits are different. Okay. They're designed specifically for the activity.
How many of the trail workers get injured?
I'll pass that to Tom, Tom just had an experience.
Hardly anyone. The Idaho Trails Association was formed in 2010, so this will be our 14th season. We've never had a serious accident, not one. We have had some accidents where people have received a puncture wound. That happened to me last year. And I had to leave a project first time ever in my long career of doing wilderness work. But accidents are rare. And we credit that to the crew leaders. Like the Friends of Scotchmen, we train our crew leaders not just in first aid, but more importantly, in prevention of accidents. And so we spend a lot of time talking about what are the potential hazards. Interesting, one of the things that people seldom think about is gravity. And we have had some Forest Service people that have worked for many, many years in the woods have come and talked to us about accidents they have had in the Forest Service. And many of those were due to gravity, where someone was working on a section of trail, the wind was blowing, and lo and behold, there were some limbs up above hanging up in the trees, and the wind blew them out. Jeff Halligan talks about somebody seriously injured. And so, anyway, we work on accident prevention.
Okay. What's the most important skill, Carol, for non-medical folks who spend time in outdoor pursuits?
Well, there are many. I think the first thing for someone to always remember if there's a situation, an emergency situation, is to check the scene for safety. Mm-hmm. Because as a rescuer, you don't want to become a victim. You don't want anybody else in the area to become a victim. So that's the first thing we do is talk about scene safety always.
So you get them to the inside part of the hiking trail rather than that outside where you can go down several feet. How often is your course available, and how do people find it so they can sign up?
Go to scotchmanspeak.org. It's www.scotchmanpeaks. There are two Scotchman Peaks, so it's plural, .org. And there's sign-up information available there.
Okay. And you said it was usually available in April, so we've missed that. But a fall course is sometimes given, and then again every April. So right before the season before people get going.
Correct.
When they're just itching to get out and do something that's not snow-related or mud-related. Okay. Susie, do you have any questions?
Well, just listening to this, I was writing down some of the things we've been talking about so far, and I came up with be prepared, be trained, and be smart. You kind of, some people probably say, we're going to go for a hike out in the wilderness. Yay, let's go. But I think it's essential that the wilderness has, you are respectful for the fact that you are out there, and then pay attention to your surroundings was what I've gathered so far.
Okay. Susie, that is really important because what we want folks to get out of this class is, I'd really rather not ever have to do any of this. Mm-hmm. So being prepared and preventing are the keys, and we do talk a lot about that.
Okay. That's wonderful.
Yep.
I first met Tom with the Monday Hikers several years before one of our most interesting hikes. It was on July 2nd, and we went to Moose Mountain, and it was kind of a nice day, a little cooler. June and July hadn't gotten as warm as they usually do in Sandpoint, and we were eating our lunch, and this gray cloud came down, and we went, oh, maybe it's going to rain. It snowed. And we all had to walk down from lunch, and there were already some snow on the ground, so wet, muddy, and even wetter from the kind of snow that comes down on July 2nd. And he was very prepared. He had his nice rain pants and his nice rain jacket and everything like that, so I was pretty impressed, and I went out and bought the same brand. I also learned about his significant involvement with the Idaho Trails Association, which sometimes we'll call the ITA. And he helps to maintain the beautiful trails and advocates for the trails across our state by being on the board and being a teacher of Backpacking 101. So let's start with a summary of Backpacking 101.
Well, Backpacking 101 is intended primarily for people who are just getting into the sport. It's also good for people who've been in the sport for quite a while because we talk about the latest gear. And as you may know, it's sort of like electronics. When you buy the latest and greatest thing, 6 months later, out comes a better latest and greatest thing. And so the course is intended to teach people how to be safe. And so it's interesting, in the American Red Cross Wilderness and Remote First Aid, as Carol said, the first thing we teach students is to check to make sure it's safe, check to make sure that the other members in the party are okay. We teach the same thing in backpacking. The other thing we try to teach is something that's gained only with experience, and that's judgment. To have the judgment to remember, we better check the weather from time to time. We better remember to check to make sure all people in the party are keeping up with the group, and that nobody is obviously in distress. So the Backpacking 101 is about equipment and how to pack your pack, but it's also about judgment. Because as Susie said, there's beautiful wilderness areas here in Idaho. In fact, maybe a statistic that'll be interesting to your listeners, there are 10,000 miles of non-motorized hiking trails in the state of Idaho.
That's amazing. 10,000
miles.
That's amazing.
And so how many of those miles are maintained? Not as many as we would like. In fact, way less than half. And that's not because people don't care. It's because there just isn't enough money to do it all. So the Friends of Scotchman Peak and ITA use volunteer labor to go out and maintain our trails on our public land. And so there's a really double benefit to this. One is you get to go out and help your trails on your public land. But the other thing is, as Joanne knows as a physician, it's healthy to be outside. It's also healthy to be with other people with similar interests. And so what we find is people really enjoy the camaraderie. They really enjoy the physical labor. They enjoy the scenery and the outdoors. And so that's what ITA's training program's all about. We teach the backpacking, then we also teach trail work. We teach day hiking as we do day hikes. We also have several instructors that do the same course that Carol's talked about, the American Red Cross Wilderness and Remote First Aid course. Because when we started 14 years ago, we had 20 members. And now we have 823, I think was the count yesterday, with 5,000 people on the mailing list. This year, we have 84 projects all around the state of Idaho. Some people go out for a one-day project. We like to do those because we get them hooked. They'll come out and see how much fun it is, and then we'll say, well, if you enjoyed a one-day project, how about going for 3 or 4 days? And when they like that, then we'll send them out for a week. And that's why that Backpacking 101 becomes more important, because they need to know how to do it safely and comfortably. So we're blessed with the public lands in Idaho, but nothing's free. And so to enjoy those lands, we have to help maintain them.
Okay. How often is the course offered, and how do people sign up? When is it usually?
For the ITA course, same thing as the Friends of Scotchman. We do one in the spring and we do one in the fall. We now have so many crew leaders that we are doing multiple spring classes and multiple fall classes. To sign up, go to our website, which is Idaho Trails, plural, idahotrailsassociation.org. And you can sign up for a project. You can see all kinds of resources if you're a hiker, but you can also sign up for courses.
So I know you do Backpacking 101. Is there a 201?
No. Well, actually, there is. Well, for the first time last year, we did what we now call the wilderness immersion trips. We'll go out for a week or 10 days in the wilderness, which is really wonderful. But I had the opportunity years ago to go spend a month in the wilderness without coming out. And so we now take people, we fly them into a really remote area, and we leave them for 3 weeks. And so that's been really successful. People really enjoyed that.
It's kind of like adult camp.
It's not always adult, but
well, or from teenage. What's the lowest age, I guess?
Well, we'll take youth all the way down to 10 years old with a parent.
If their parent comes.
Yeah, but then from 18 on, they can sign up for these multi-day projects. And we have quite a few young people coming out and doing this now and getting really passionate about it.
It's wonderful to develop a love of conservation and a love of being outside when you're in middle school or high school. That's, you know, it's really a life skill then. Susie.
Well, and I'm listening, and one of the couple things that came to mind were resources. I'm talking about the Forest Service, and I wrote down, know where you are going. Know the trail. Know the potential. Like you said, Tom, to check the weather. Know how to do that. Have the right equipment with you. But it seems like the Forest Service initially would be a great resource to know where you're going.
The Forest Service has good information about the trails. Of those 10,000 miles, about 9,000 are on Forest Service land. And they have pretty good information, but there's so many trails and the funding is so tight that sometimes they don't know much about trails. So ITA has a thing we call the Trail Reporter. So for all of your listeners, you know, now that we're in June and people are getting out there and hiking, we asked for you to please go to the Trail Reporter. And it has a simple form you fill out to talk about which trail you just hiked, what it was like, how many trees were down, was it washed out by floods, was there still snow on the trail. We can then send that information to the Forest Service, and we talk with them, and together we decide which trails do we need to go work on.
And to access that Trail Reporter would be at the IdahoTrailsAssociation.org site.
That's correct.
Okay.
There are so many books, too. I mean, you can go to the library, you can go to the bookstores, you can go to Outdoor Experience, and they all sell books about the Idaho trails, which are, you know, great to have. And there's also a huge map of the trails, too, that a lot of people keep in their car.
There's some wonderful online resources. Gaia is one online resource you can use on your phone.
Spell it.
G-A-I-A.
Okay.
And it, if you go to GAIAGPS.com, you can log on. Also, All Trails is another site. There's many of these sites today that you can use on your phone. One word of caution. One of the things we've noticed, we've actually helped rescue some people that have been out hiking in the wilderness areas. And we had one case where a person was hiking along, looking at their smartphone, following the trail they were on, and fell off a rock and injured themselves. And so, you know, the phone is handy as a resource, but you're out there to enjoy nature. So look at it, then put it away. We lead multiple youth trips every year where we take youth that are disadvantaged and youth that haven't been out in the wilderness areas. We take them out for a week and we provide crew leaders. And before they go out on the trail, we take their phones away. And we get more reports coming back from the kids saying, wow, it was really great to disconnect. Again, what we want to do is get people out there in nature. We want them to enjoy the benefits of hard work, and we want them to enjoy the benefits of camaraderie.
That's really good. What should we have in our packs for hiking, cycling, kayaking? Are there different things? Of course, there are different things if you're doing a long distance hike, but let's just say a one day or a half a day. Let's start with those for hiking, cycling, kayaking, whatever, on your boat, your first aid kit kind of thing.
Sure. Carol, you have on your website the first aid kit list, don't you?
Should we post that, Susie, on our website or somewhere? Can we do that or not?
We'll find out.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, there's a really good first aid kit list that Carol and I and some others put together a number of years back. We also have the same list in the ITA.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the question about what's in your pack.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I would caution people, if you're going to go out on a half-day hike, use the same care as if you're going out for a five-day hike, because a half-a-day hike can lead you to, Joanne, the situation we had on Moose Mountain where we got 4 to 6 inches of snow on July 2nd. I mean, who would have believed that? So there's a list called the 10 Essentials. Just Google it, and you'll get the list of 10 essentials, and it'll tell you the things that you should be carrying in your pack.
And here they are, too.
Oh, and look at that. Carol's got the list right there. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay. Well, I think one of the most important things to do is file a travel plan, and Tom can talk more about that if he'd like to, and also the navigation assists that are available. A headlamp is good to have with extra batteries just in case either you have to stay overnight or you're delayed in getting back and it's dark as you head out. Sun protection, sunglasses, etc. Your first aid kit. And interesting, the 10 essentials list with the first aid kit, they said, including foot care and insect repellent. And one of the most common emergencies that we have is blisters. And blisters are so easy to prepare, prevent, take care of if you are aware and get right on it. Don't wait for a hot spot to become a blister. Okay, a knife, fire, matches, whatever. Shelter could be a light emergency bivy, or even a what are the emergency blankets called? I'm losing the word.
Space blanket.
Space blanket is wonderful. You could use that in the snow. On
those tinfoil like ones that they give out after marathons and long races. They're not really tinfoil, but they're silver.
Extra food beyond maybe, you know, even if it's just tossing in a couple extra granola bars or something in case you're delayed coming out. Extra water. And we often underestimate water in one of the more common problems is dehydration. And so that's really important. And also extra clothes, a little rain poncho, a little plastic cheap rain poncho could be a lifesaver and prevent hypothermia. So these are all things to keep in mind.
Well, that's great. We will see if we can post that somewhere.
Yep.
Two things about that list. First, navigation. There is a device available today made by Garmin called the InReach. There are similar devices from other manufacturers, but I implore people that are going to go out in the wilderness here in Idaho that if you're going to go out in the wilderness, get one of those devices. I've also volunteered for years in search and rescue, and we had a number of cases where young people in the prime of life, very strong, would go out and wander around for 3 days lost and die. And we would ultimately have to recover the bodies. We had a very well-known hiker in northern Idaho who last year went out for a solo hike, and we've never found him. And if people will have that device, that we can go right to you within 3 feet. And so we can get right to you if you press that SOS button. And so the devices are $350 to $400 and about a $12 a month service plan. Ask yourself, what's your life worth? And I hope it's worth more than $400. And so go get one of those satellite communication devices. The ones that we like are Garmin InReach. Comes in several different models. The second thing is about clothing. We have a saying in search and rescue, cotton kills. Don't wear cotton. If you're going to go out in the mountains for more than an hour, don't wear Levi's, wear nylon. And nylon dries faster, doesn't wick water. Cotton kills.
That's a really, really good direction and instruction. Susie.
Well, I just wanted to say this is 88.5 KRFY, and we're here with Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. her show about this month is, what is this month, Joanne?
The Great Outdoors.
And who are we talking to?
We're talking to Carol and Tom Dabrowski. Carol Jenkins and Tom.
Okay.
All right. So again, you added, Tom, a little bit about the multi-day trip. Obviously, you have to take clothes that you can wash easily, like underwear, and food, and your blanket, and your sleeping bag. So that's a lot more equipment. What's the heaviest pack you've ever carried?
The heaviest pack I ever carried was 90 pounds.
How far did you go?
Well, we were in the Arctic in the Brooks Range climbing mountains that had never been climbed before. And we had very heavy climbing gear. And this was beyond remote. And so it was tiring and difficult. Today, my base weight now without food is about 14 pounds. And that's part of the advantage of coming to the Backpacking 101 course is we can show you how to cut your base weight in your pack. In addition, we can show you how to bring food that works better. Because here, normally, when we're at home, we try to eat and minimize calories. When you're in the backcountry, you want to maximize calories. So the key thing is keep your pack lighter. You'll have more fun. You'll be safer. And at the end of the day, you'll feel a whole lot better about this experience.
So is that 14 pounds with a sleeping bag?
Yep.
Oh.
And a tent and a kitchen and clothes, spare clothes. One thing about backpacking for long distances, as backpackers say, you have to get used to the stink. And they keep saying that. Personally, I like to take a swim or a shower each day. And I'll put out a little water bag with a shower head on it, and I'll hang it in a tree and have a warm shower at the end of the day. So, one of the things I really preach to people is bring everything you need to be safe. And then take out the stuff you don't use. And when you get your pack weight down, then put the things back in that make you happy.
That's kind of like packing in general. You bring all the stuff out, then you put it in the suit, or then you start folding, and then you go, oh, I don't think I really need this top or this, that, and mm-hmm. you take it out.
Sounds like be smart, be prepared, and be safe.
Definitely. So, like the prepared food, if you walk through the aisles at REI or lots of other outdoor places, you see all this dehydrated food. Is that the kind of food that you're using, or do you have other tricks to make things lighter weight?
Well, there's all kinds of tricks on that. One of the great things about food is it all comes with a nutrition label. And so if you look at the nutrition label, there's an old adage, plan about 2 pounds of food per day that you're out. That's a general guideline, but it's not the weight that counts. It's the amount of energy that's in your food. So you want energy-dense food. One of the most energy-dense foods there is walnuts. One of the least energy-dense foods there is tuna fish. And so a lot of people bring those foil packets of tuna. But when you look at calories per gram of weight you're carrying, it's very low. So when I make breakfast, I use non-cooked granola with a lot of walnuts in it. So I get lots of calories per gram. The thing we also look for with food is stuff that won't spoil. Obviously, you're not going to bring a pound of ground beef because it's very energy dense. But it doesn't last long without refrigeration.
It'd be a different kind of stink.
It would. The other thing is you want food that's stout. Some backpackers just absolutely love Fritos. When they get to a trail break, they'll get a whole bag of Fritos. The problem with Fritos is if you have them in a pack for a day, they're just crushed down to nothing but a powder. But most important of all, bring stuff that you'll eat. I mean, I've been on backpacking trips where I've said to people, why aren't you eating your dinner? I said, I hate this stuff. I said, well, why'd you bring it? Well, I don't know. I thought it was really energy dense. Well, it might be energy dense, but it isn't doing you any good if you don't eat it.
You're not going to put it in your mouth. What are the most common injuries, and is there a sport in which we see more injuries? I'm thinking about primarily hiking and cycling or kayaking all the way around the lake or kayaking a long distance. One that I know is not that we don't do it, but motorcycle riding, an orthopedic surgeon, trauma surgeon once told us, when my husband injured his femur, all the people here said, of course, are they going to let you ski again? And all the people in Columbus, Ohio went, oh, you'll never ski again, will you? And so he was talking to the orthopedic trauma surgeon, and he, you know, she said he could ski, obviously. And he said, well, what activity do you tell people never to do again? And she said, motorcycle riding. Mm-hmm. That if somebody comes in with orthopedic trauma, that should be the end of their discussion. So again, let's talk about the specific injuries, falls. Is there one that's most consistent in general, an injury area? And then, yeah, Carol.
Yes, the most common injuries we see, are blisters, twisted ankles, falls, and dehydration, and hypothermia. And those are all things that we can focus on preventing, and hopefully we do. So when we have a situation where there's injuries or trauma or illnesses in the remote setting, the first thing that we're going to do is check the scene and then check the person for any life-threatening situations. And these can be no breathing, severe bleeding, choking, anaphylaxis, and submersion incidents. And with all the water that we have in our part of the world, that's something that we do spend a little time talking about also.
What about head and neck injuries, people who hit their head? Is that
that's common,
not as common? It's more your lower extremity?
That's part of falls, and this is interesting because in the last few years, concussion care has really changed. Remember in the old days, we used to say, wake a person up every 2 hours, make sure. Well, you know, you have a person with a brain injury, and what they need to do is rest. They need to sleep.
Well, I always thought that was kind of a silly, you know.
Absolutely.
Crane checks every 2 hours.
Yeah. So there's a lot that we've learned and when changes are made to Red Cross care, it's because of science. It's all science-based in studying, for example, how to care for fractures. They said, well, if you're within an hour, don't splint them. That's one of the changes due to the science. And head injuries is another, spinal or head injuries. So that's a very important part of our course.
Don't move them.
Yes, and in a remote setting, you may have to. So we discuss what to do if that is mm-hmm. necessary. We may need to shelter them from the environment. We may need to get them out maybe they're half in a creek and we have to get their body up on dry land. So, yes, want to move them, but we might have to.
And you want to keep them like at the same level so you're not bending them if they can. Right.
Well, we like them to be, right.
Supine.
Yes. And the recommendation about raising the feet has changed a couple of times since I've been teaching this class. So if someone has not had a class recently, it's good to take it again. This certification lasts for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And when you're done, you will know how to assess the victim. We haven't talked about some of this, but it's very much a part of the course of how to check a body and look for injuries.
Good.
Listening to this, I think about when to know to call for an evacuation from an outside source. And I don't know, it probably doesn't happen often if you have well-trained people on the trail with you, but that probably does happen at times.
Yes, it does. Our manual, interestingly enough, has 35 different fast evacuation situations, and only, I think, 6 or 8 where a slow evacuation might be needed. But in reality, so we're almost over-preparing because in reality, evacuations are very rare, very, very rare. However, if a person is going to volunteer as a first aider and give care, they want to feel comfortable about making those decisions and what goes into making those decisions. So.
A week after we were at Chimney Rock, a Sandpoint and Spokane journalist ended up with her, foot caught in a rock. I mean, John and I were going, oh, I don't know if we don't want to go farther. These rocks aren't very stable. And then we went back to Columbus, and we heard that someone had gotten stuck on Chimney Rock for overnight. And then another guy, a gentleman that I know, had a heart attack on Scotchman's Peak.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know about that one. And so things do happen. And one of the things that both Tom and I have worked on is a form that I know the radio audience can't see, but it's a report form that we use when we give care to someone in a remote situation. And the beauty of it is you don't have to remember details like a normal heart rate or a normal respiration rate or exactly what shock looks like in a victim, because it's all on this form. You just have to follow along, fill in the blanks, and it will help you get through your secondary assessment of the victim and help you determine whether or not evacuation is needed, what kind of evacuation would be needed, and what kind of care you need to give to the victim. Okay. So when folks leave the class, they've had all this knowledge. We have about 30 scenarios now where we practice using what we've learned, and they have a little pocket guide of first aid tips that they can put in their pack or their pocket. And they have this wonderful form that just guides them all the way through their assessment and their care. So they don't have to panic about remembering a whole bunch of details.
Nice. And then wounds, certainly cleaning and dressing them and preventing infection, kind of what we call road rash from an abrasion. Or on an overnight, has anyone fallen into a campfire?
Not to my knowledge. Fire is one
thing.
A trip
on a rock, I guess.
Actually, we had a case where it wasn't someone falling into a fire. It was someone tipping over a pot of boiling water. Mm-hmm. If you stop and think about it, that's, yep. We don't generally build campfires. We try to avoid that.
Okay.
But boiling water is a hazard. And it's remarkable how people will shuffle around as they're ready to make their dinner with that boiling water. So we have had a case where somebody got a burn from boiling water.
So do you use propane if you don't build a fire? How do you boil the water?
They use a little camp stove.
Okay.
It's a propane-butane mix.
That's right.
That works. We haven't talked about bear smart and wildlife. And, you know, that can be a hazard. We live in a remote part of the country where we have bears and other animals. So how does that fit into if someone was attacked or whatever into this first aid and being ready and prepared picture, knowing what you're doing?
I'll talk about prevention, and I'm going to let Carol talk about what to do in terms of treatment, if you're okay with that. But prevention is the important factor here. The first thing is don't hike alone. And when you're out hiking, and it's sort of interesting with our Monday hikers, which is a very active group. We're never seeing wildlife because we're never quiet. So when you're out there, make noise. And if you have food with you, keep the food wrapped up so that it's not particularly fragrant. Bears have an incredibly sensitive sense of smell, and they can smell you way far away. Carry bear spray and learn how to use it. I know every year we have an ITA event to celebrate the end of the season, And every year we train people how to use bear spray. We have canisters that have the propellant but not the active ingredient, so you can practice spraying. And also there are bear aware festivals in northern Idaho. And this summer, later this summer, I believe there's going to be one in Bonner's Ferry. There was in 2023. You can go practice. They actually have a motorized bear that'll run towards you. And it's fun and it's impressive. They are fast. So the big thing is prevention. When you're camping, keep your food away from your campsite where you're going to sleep. Hang it so the animals can't get to it. But then if you do have a bear attack, that's a pretty serious thing.
Yes, and I actually attended one of Tom's classes on bears, and I may have this a little wrong, but I think I remember that your goal is not to spray the bear. Your goal is to set up a wall of bear spray when the bear is still 20 feet or more away from you.
Yes.
And make it down, you know, low so that the bear has to come up to this wall of bear spray and decide if he wants to go any further or not. And certainly any animal wounds need first aid care. They need cleaning and dressing. We teach, of course, how to handle severe bleeding in the class and what kind of materials to use for that. And all animal bites should be seen by a professional because of the possibility of infection, or there may need to be some surgery or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they're fast evacuations.
Okay, great. We've talked a little bit about heat and cold. Heat cramps or heat exhaustion, do you see that commonly when we have the summer where we have 6 weeks of 90 to 100 degrees? Or fortunately, some of the high points are cooler.
Well, we certainly cover all of this in our class. Okay. I'm not out much anymore at my age, but Tom is. So he could tell you more about what he sees with that. But certainly that's something we learn about in the class.
One of the things we stress is the use of electrolytes. And so we tell people, bring electrolytes, your choice. Try them before you come on the trip because some of them don't agree with the digestive system. But bring electrolytes and use them because people do get severe cramping at night if they're not keeping their electrolyte balance right. That's the big thing with heat. And then a cold, of course. Bring your hat, bring a good stocking hat, and never wear cotton.
Gloves. Bring gloves. Mm-hmm. How about plants that people see and touch?
Yes, we have in our book, we have photos of poisonous plants and we talk about where they're located. So, for example, poison ivy is in all states except for Alaska and Hawaii. Poison sumac is in the southeastern U.S., so we don't have to worry about that. But if you're going there, hike the Appalachian Trail or something, you're going to want to be aware of it. And poison oak is all states west of the Rocky Mountains. So we do have those plants, and they're pictured in the first aid manual. All of them have the small white, tan, cream, or yellow berries in fall. So it's good to have these photos and be able to recognize them in the remote setting.
And we have a lot of poison ivy in Idaho. If we do projects in Hell's Canyon every spring, and it's the only place I've ever been where the poison ivy is 8 feet tall and you have to wade through it. There's also poison ivy along the shore of Lake Pend'Oreille. For example, down at Evans Landing, you can find poison ivy there. I know Phil and Deb were kayaking the lake and found a number of different sites with it. So you need to know what poison ivy looks like.
Three shiny leaves upon a slender stalk.
There you go.
Three leaves, leave it be.
Thank you. Tom, tell us a little bit about how we can get involved with the Idaho Trails Association. I assume it's going to the website and seeing what you'd like to do, but is that the best way? Do they have meet and greets around the state?
We don't do a lot of meet and greet things. What we do, we're work centric. So what we do is tell people go to the website and look at the different projects. And it's daunting. As I said, there's 84, 85 projects on there this year. And it's hard sometimes to decide which ones. But start with a one-dayer that appeals to you because of where it is or what the type of work is. And then once you come on a project, you'll meet other people with similar interests. And then from there, you're on your way.
Okay.
So the way to get involved is to go to the website and sign up for a project.
See what you like. Mm-hmm. So again, in Bonner County, there's just so much. The Monday Hikers, the Pondere Peddlers. I'm not even going to be able to name them all. The Friends of Scotchman's Peak, Sandpoint Parks and Rec, the Kinnicksu Land Trust and all of their lovely land. Every time we hike in like Sherwood Forest or Pine Street Woods, the VTT, even the Sand Creek Trail and over to Trout Creek, people are so amazed, the Pondere Bay Trail, are so amazed that we can, you know, hike within 3 miles, 3 to 10 miles of our house, and especially the Pine Street Woods and VTT. They are so very close and we can enjoy them.
I just want to go back to how amazing it is, and we get to live here in this beautiful, beautiful wilderness in our little tiny area, and how fortunate are we?
I was interested, I was doing a little research on this, that there are actually 2 centennial trails in the state of Idaho. We're so used to the one going east-west, and one time we told our friends we, you know, biked to Spokane, and they went, "You did?" And it's like, well, we dropped our car off in Post Falls and we rode to Spokane on the Centennial Trail, but that cut off a lot of miles coming from Sandpoint. But there's also a Centennial Trail that goes north and south. It's, mm-hmm. what, 900 miles or something?
Yeah, well, the walking part is 900 miles. Mm-hmm. There's parts of the trail that go around the wilderness areas so that they can use bicycles or motorized things, and that's 1,200 miles. But in fact, I want to thank the governor that he put extra money in the Idaho budget to help maintain the Idaho Centennial Trail. And so we're actively working. There are sections of that trail that are almost impossible to find.
And you have to bushwhack.
Very difficult to hike. And so we're working to get the trail in better shape.
Good. What's the longest hike or outdoor experience you've ever done? Carol, first.
Well, the most memorable for me and the most difficult was Scotchman's Peak. And I hiked with the leaders of Friends of Scotchman's Peak and some other folks who were all very athletic and hiked all the time. And I was maybe 65 and just came off a very bad bout of bronchitis. And I thought I was going to die. But I did make it down. It wasn't pretty. I wasn't pretty. I was suffering. But the views up there, if you go on a clear day, you'll never forget it.
So it was more of a day hike, but a long day hike.
Yep.
1,000 feet in a mile is always the, you know, you go, wow, that's really steep. So Tom's probably done the multi-day ones, the 30-day or weeks or months.
The longest I've ever been out without coming out at all was a month, was 31 days in the Wind River Range in Wyoming. And we did about 200 miles, a lot of it off trail, a lot of along the way climbing a lot of the mountains in there. It's absolutely a gorgeous area. But if any of your listeners ever have an opportunity to go into the wilderness and stay for more than 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. It's
a really special thing because you smell things you don't normally smell, you hear things you don't normally hear, and you kind of revert to an earlier stage.
Yeah, well, again, that's building self-reliance, building self-confidence too, and just giving your brain a little bit of, you know, or a lot of rest. So what's the most important message we can take away? I'll start with Carol.
I think prepare and prevent are the most important, and get training. I think what we teach in this 16-hour first aid class, I wish it were taught in high school to all students before they graduate. They're really life skills. Mm-hmm. So it's a pleasure to work with people who have committed themselves to be first aiders. They're willing to take that risk and responsibility, and it's a joy to work with them, and I encourage people to get themselves some education in any way they can.
Okay, that's wonderful. Tom?
Well, I want to thank Carol for teaching that course. She does a wonderful job and has really prepared a lot of people to do what I think is my fundamental message, and that is get off the couch, put down the piece of pie, shut off the TV, get outside. You live in a place. I hope this isn't broadcast widely because we don't need more people moving to the area, but we live in a really special place. And get out and enjoy it because it's fantastic.
Okay. Susie.
What I'm just hearing that getting out and enjoying it is transformative mm-hmm. and perfect. I love the message. Thank you for being here.
Okay. And I thank you so much for visiting with me today, Carol and Tom. I hope this will encourage our listeners and their acquaintances to get outdoors, not only in June, but daily all year long. Thanks for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne on 88.5 KRFY. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It is not a substitute for discussing concerns with your medical provider. Hope you'll tune in again on July 1st when we'll be discussing UV safety with our local dermatologists. Any other comments anyone wants to finish up with? I just want to thank Carol and Tom especially. I think we had a great session.
It was perfect. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.